Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahabiryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So, page 10, just the middle. This verse is particularly applicable to modern society, because in modern society there is practically no education in spiritual matters. In this verse particularly, the process of hearing is strongly recommended, and this is very appropriate. Although the common man is often not as capable as so-called philosophers, faithful hearing from an authoritative person will help one transcend this material existence and go back to Godhead, back to home. So, due to this lack of spiritual education, then it's not part of the natural cultivation, right, of lifestyle and practices in the modern society, right? Most other societies that we would consider that are not as modern or so modern, there's a concept of the philosophy, the religion, and the lifestyle being combined. It's one entity, right? Just different aspects of it. So it's expected that one will have a proper, you know, viewpoint, proper culture, proper attitude. But in the modern society, that's not okay. And the point of that is because karma yoga is based on good qualities. Jnana yoga is based on those good qualities with renunciation. One is good qualities with work and endeavor. The other is good qualities with detachment. Right? And yoga is that peacefulness to be able to just sit and focus and meditate. Right? Be in a solitary place, do these things. So these qualities, though normally are inherently part of the lifestyle of someone following a religious process, in the modern society it's not. Right? One may say no, but they're good qualities, and people appreciate that someone is, you know, has proper behavior and all that. But where does it come from? It's not coming from religion. Maybe for an individual it is, maybe for some groups it is, right? But in the modern culture, what we call the modern culture, the modern, you know, democratic, how you say, consumerist culture, right? Where your money, you know, generating good facility and having a peaceful environment in which the maximum amount of people, at least ideally, are able to, or let's say ideologically, are able to take advantage of it, then the basis is not religion, which is dharma, the basis is artha, right? So in other words, the good qualities are there only for the purpose to see that artha and karma go on nicely. Does that make sense? So there's a difference. There's a difference. So some may say, no, but you know, it's based on good qualities. You have to have good qualities. But the good qualities are there so that artha goes nicely, right? So you're working hard to make your money for sense gratification. It's not your religious duty. There's no long-term, necessarily. Long-term means something beyond, you know, this lifetime. Anyone who's working in longer terms, right? Because those who are working in karma yoga are looking at longer. I will do something now, in the future I'll get the good benefit. And not only that, in some things they'll get benefit this life, but some things it'll be next life, right? So if we look at the modern scenario, then those who are considered to be, great leaders of, the modern economic success, then one of the common elements is they generally think in a 20-year plan. They think ahead 20 years. And so that's considered very unique or special amongst modern man, right? Someone who's, other than those guys, your standard guy, if he's really together, he's got a 5-year plan. Not 20, 5 only. Right? And the other person is just thinking, what's going to happen today, tomorrow, next week, hey, we're going on vacation at Christmas, that's it. It doesn't go past specific little things. It's not a plan for the life. You understand? So, how do we get into that? Okay, yes. So these qualities that they have of that, determination, perseverance, work ethic, and all that, are for the purpose of economic development. It's not because they're not doing business because this is their duty, right? They're grihastha or their business, families or something. They're doing it because they want the results of business. You understand? Because karma yoga means it's your duty to do business. So you do it, the result is up to the Lord. And that result then is dealt with in an aspect of detachment. You understand? So the qualities are different. Right? It's basically saying quality, but in its interface with the living entity, the individual, it doesn't have as such a religious purpose, because religion deals with the nature of something, right? Religion deals with the nature, but this is not dealing with the nature, this is just dealing with their desire. So then the problem is you have to have some semblance of some good quality to make everybody work together without killing each other. So that's the only purpose of the good quality. Right? Because otherwise, bottom line is what they do in their spare time, as long as it doesn't bother anybody else, nobody cares. Yes?
Well, when devotees who don't do their business, they are not interested because they are not interested in artha so much.
They're not
interested in artha then. So
they're not interested in artha.
They don't do anything productive sometimes outside because they're not into artha anymore.
No, but if you don't require it, why worry about it?
Family, sometimes it just seems lazy.
Yeah, but laziness is not a good quality. It's not. So, in other words, the good qualities are meant for devotional service. So, if you're not engaged in devotional service, then at least you're being a nice guy. So then you're being a nice, following these other practices of karma, jnana, yoga. You're doing something that's progressive. So laziness is not an option. It's not a quality that there's an option in. So that's also a problem, is that they'll think that my not endeavoring for material benefit is actually detachment or renunciation, when basically it's just laziness. Right? It means it's not that someone who's practicing, a brahminical occupation may be living a simpler lifestyle, but he's making his endeavor. He's not doing nothing. Right? Because people who do nothing, in the Vedic system aren't married. Brahmacharya is the sannyasis, vanaprasas, they don't do anything to generate money. But they're not active grihasthas, so they don't need. But if one's an active grihastha, he has to generate funds. See, their varna is there, right? For the other three, technically there is no varna. It's just the brahminical lifestyle is what their occupation. So basically, brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis are Brahmins. Even if they're not by varna, but their lifestyle and their occupation is brahminical. So only the grihasthas, then they can take up, besides the brahminical, they could take up the kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Right, so it's much more limited. Does that make sense? So in other words, laziness, but at the same time, as you have to see that it's the performance of your duty, and then what comes from that, that's what you then you live on. You know what I'm saying? In other words, do you have what money you want and whatever time is given to that, or you give your certain amount of time and whatever money comes? You understand? So Prabhupada recommends 8 hours for varna, right? For your occupation that generates your facilities, 8 hours of devana, right? Because if you do more than that for a grihastha, it's going to take out of your sadhana, right? Because that starts at, 4 in the morning, right? Until 9 o'clock, by that time, now you're ready to go do something else. Right, and then you need some. Then there's family time, and then there's sleep. Right, so more than 8 hours is going to cut out of something. Does that make sense? So what you get in 8 hours, that's what you live with. Right, because one may say, no, but if you work more, you get more. Not necessarily. Maybe a touch more, but what do you lose? Right. That's the point, because these really wealthy people in 8 hours can make hundreds of thousands or millions. Another guy makes $10. So the point is you're only going to get where you're going to get anyway. So might as well be satisfied. Is that okay? But laziness is not a quality. Yes?
You see, in the working field, the environment's very much changing, so that there is often an expectation for you to work outside of that period of time.
That's what you have to decide, if that's what you want to be involved in. Because by working outside of that time, you'll make more money or keep that position. But at the same time, is it worth it what you lose on the other side, right? Okay, you spend the time. You have to put in that extra time. You make them more money. But what is that time coming out of? Because it's not coming out of varna time. Varna time is 8 hours. That's done. It's coming out of ashram time. And for a grihastha, that means then it's divided between sadhana and, sadhana and family. So something's going to go there. So now then you just have to decide how you want to live. So that's why traditionally dwijas are independent, because then they set their hours. I'm saying they're the ones setting the hours. They're not. It's not being set for them. Does that make sense?
So then that's the element of sacrifice that one would have to make to make sure that you're prominent.
That's the sacrifice you'd have to make. But then, if by saying that's the sacrifice you would have to make, then you're taking it that making of money is the prominent element, the primary element, and then family and. And sadhana is secondary. Do you understand? Yeah. Just like it was saying here before, is that Ashtanga Yoga with cultivation of Ashtanga Yoga, if you take that as the primary, then as knowledge is secondary element, and they're also they're making endeavor. So it's considered, the first six stages are considered karma yoga. Shankhyena refers to the method of Shankhya with meditation as a secondary element. Working without fruit of desires refers to nice karma with cultivation of knowledge and meditation as secondary elements. So if we say that, okay, that's the sacrifice I have to make, that I don't put so much time, then you're making economics the primary element, family and like that. You know what I'm saying? But varna means we should never take it when the statement is used where Prabhupada mentions varna first, means varna is the prominent element. No, because ashram is already brahminical. There's no other form of ashram. There's no kshatriya ashram or vaishya ashram or shudra ashram. There's only ashram. It's brahminical. Right? Brahmacharya grihastha vanaprastha sannyasa. That's a brahminical process. It's for the purpose of understanding Brahman. Right? Varna, then that's where the Brahman kshatriya vaishya shudra comes in. And that's only applicable, as we said, to grihasthas. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, all the brahmacharis do the same thing. Even though it's understood, okay, they have a brahmacharya or Vaishnava nature, but their duties are the same. All vanaprasthas, no matter what varna they're from, their duties are the same. Right? All sannyasis, no matter what varna they're from, the duties are the same. Does that make sense? So the varna first element means that understanding that, then you can define, you know, how they will be situated in you know, how will they, you know, when do they begin brahmacharya? Do they begin brahmacharya? When do they get out of it? Will they be grihasthas or not? You know what I'm saying? Because generally, only Brahmins would not get married. Right? Always Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they always get married. Right? Very rare you see where someone doesn't. But otherwise, even if they're not, they're living in the grihastha environment. Right? You know, sometimes the business family, there's one person who's not married, but he's doing business and he's involved in the family and everything, but he's just not married. Right? Because like a Shudra, he doesn't go to Gurukul, so it's considered he's always Grihastha. Right? Brahmachari means you're not at home, you go to the school. Then that's Brahmacharya. Right? If you live at home all the time, you're Grihastha, just unmarried.
So then what does secondary become primary because of lack of faith in Krishna?
Does the secondary become primary because of lack of faith? It's not necessarily lack of faith, it's just, you know, strong faith in the material energy, that's all. Because you're dealing with two things at once. One's material attachments. You know, that was the point before, is that the living entity is addicted to a certain combination of the modes. So then economics is one combination, someone else's power, someone else's art and expression, you know, someone else's their knowledge and everything's like this. So everybody has their specific attachment. So the idea is connect that attachment to Krishna, right? Then it starts to work. So you don't want to overbalance it. Because the point is that, you know, why have a family if one is not going to take care? You know, like that. That's the point. Okay. So, therefore, in this age, let's say this time, not this age specifically, this time where there is no training in lifestyle processes that are elevating, right? In a way other than elevating to the point of economics, right? Because the other systems will take one past economics into dharma and moksha, right? So then this process of hearing, which is the most important of all these processes, still works. So through hearing, then one gets this understanding. Through hearing, then we take that in practice. And through hearing, then, you know, that success is obtained. So therefore, this hearing and chanting is the most central of all the processes. So it's prominent, and then karma yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga are secondary. Right? So that's why before Krishna's pointing these things out so you know how they work, and how they're devotional service, and how to use them to advance devotionally. But then he points out kevala bhakti, right? Pure devotional service, which means it's the primary, and these are secondary. So the hearing chanting is primary, these are secondary. Right? So when that combination, then that's your buddhi yoga. Right? Because it's primary is devotion, secondary is these other three. Whatever works. Yes?
Is kevala bhakti and buddhi yoga basically the same thing?
Well, kevala bhakti is saying that devotional element is pure.
Yeah.
Buddhi yoga means that you're engaged in devotional service through these processes of using karma, jnana, and dhyana yogas, right? So now, in here's also an interesting thing to note, is that when one is working within that system of these three yogas, one is prominent, the others are supportive, right? But then when you're talking about pure devotional service is prominent, these other three yogas are secondary, right? Now, within that secondary, according to one's conditioned nature, one will be prominent, the others will be secondary. Right? Does that make sense? So the devotion is primary, and then your particular yoga is secondary, and then that makes all the other ones tertiary. Right? That makes sense. So then, like that, then one can, you know, so one has to get used to this, that there's, you're going to have something, it's two things, but then something still has a division. It doesn't make it into three. One has to be able to accommodate that. The modern is that you get each one of them the equal thing, and that's why then, without the balance, it doesn't have the culture, right? No? Let us say, okay, let us take, we want to make some pasta, okay? And we're going to take half a kilo. Okay, so it's got, you know, some kind of variety of, you know, dried wheat product that you're going to boil. It has some kind of, let's say, we'll go with a, you know, a more generic, some tomatoes, right? There's going to be some spices, right? Some salt, some olive oil. Okay, let's just stick to that. Okay, so now the Vedic would be that, okay, you have half a kilo of pasta, you have a kilo of tomatoes, you use, you know, I would say 150 grams of the olive oil, you're going to use about, you know, 30 grams of salt, right? And what did we leave out? Oh, okay, some basil and all that, you use a handful, okay? Okay? We can live with that, okay? So you have a balance, and it has that preparation. Modern would be, okay, we have these five elements. So there's half a kilo of pasta, there's half a kilo of tomatoes, there's half a kilo of salt, there's half a kilo of olive oil, right? And there's half a kilo of basil. Bon appetit. You understand? That's the problem with the modern. It has the elements, and they'll say, that's like at the beginning of the discussion, we say, the Vedic has these good qualities, the modern doesn't. They say, no, but people know that being good and nice and working together and cooperating and democracy, you know, and mom and apple pie and all this is very, very important. Right? Oh my God. But the difficult, oh, sorry, and helping old ladies across the street. Yeah, okay. And you can still do that, right? That's not considered like male, you know, chauvinism or anything, right? Opening the door for a younger lady, now that's a problem, right? But old ladies across the street, that's
cool. Giving up your seat is also considered.
It's still cool?
Yeah.
Some places it depends, because then you might be patronizing them. Why can't they stand? They don't have enough energy to stand. What's wrong with standing? You know? Like that. Got lost somewhere with mom and apple pie. Okay, so, but the problem is they can't tell what's the balance between these qualities and what the qualities are actually meant for. You understand? Because if I know it's to eat, then I understand that I have to have a balance there. But if I don't understand it's for eating, then what does it matter to me that there's half a kilo of salt and half a kilo of pasta? Because you're not going to eat it anyway. You know, not only that, it'll be well preserved. It'll last a lot longer than this, you know, more, you know, how you say, old-fashioned way of preparation, right? You know, that goes bad after a few hours because of the tomatoes. But this, hey, you know, it turns into pasta pickle, right? You know. Now that might be interesting. You look at it as a pickle, then that might work, right? All that oil and all that salt, you'll definitely get a pickle. Wow. That's an interesting point.
Pickle marinara.
Huh?
Pickle marinara.
Pickle marinara. Okay. All right, marinara has pasta in it?
I think that's pasta.
Oh, okay, pickle marinara. Okay. Okay, cool. Okay. Then, is that clear? Is how to distinguish these qualities, because the basis of these qualities is not... Is not doesn't have a balance in progressive life other than progressing economics, right? That's why the point came up. So then we're making that sacrifice of doing less work and all that because that's what the culture is aimed at. So in the modern culture, that is a sacrifice. Right? You know, because it may mean, you know, you have to stick with your, you know, how you say, your G3 iPhone instead of the G4, you know, because, you know, you're not willing to put in that extra time, so you're not getting that extra money, so it'll just have to wait, right? Okay, we read the translations, no? The 28 to 35, yeah. Verse 28 to 35 describe the vision of a person equipped with knowledge of the material nature, the soul and the supersoul. One develops such a vision by good association. Right? So we see here is it's still always coming up. Hearing and association. Right? You see in Nectar Devotion, that's the prominent element. Krishna always is mentioning this throughout. You have to hear and you have to have proper association. I mean, hearing from the proper source and having proper association. That's what actually is the dynamic elements of the whole process. These others are to engage the conditioned nature. Right? Karma, jnana, and jnana yogas engage the conditioned nature. Right? Does that make sense? But hearing, chanting, associating with devotees, these aren't according to conditioned nature. These are the natural activities of the soul. Right? One, it can see the body, the eternal individual soul, and the super soul is actually seer, verses 28. Oh, that was the thing that we were talking about. Is the ability to understand, yeah, that they're a balance. So therefore, means you see the material, you know the field, and you know the knower of the field. But the knower of the field is two. Right? And of the two, one's senior, one's junior. Right? Just like we're saying, there's sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. But sambandha has two aspects. The field itself, and that inspiration to work in the field. Right? Because the field itself is then what the activity is based on. But the reason of activity is relationship. Right? So that starts with the desire. Right, so that starts the process of desire, goal, and I mean, start, it means, yeah, where you have your desire, there's the goal, and then you take up the activity that will accomplish that goal. Right, so those three are there, but they're based on the field. Right, so the ability to see things how they will group naturally, but what is, you know, primary, what's secondary. You know, what goes together, but it has divisions. Right? Because otherwise the modern, anytime they can find a division, they make it. But it's got equal weight with something else. Right? Means like, let's say, just say you're learning grammar. At least in English, it has this problem. Is that you have the different parts of speech. Right? Means the different, means in other words, the field of the language. And so, of that, then you have nouns and verbs, right? And then they'll have adverbs, adjectives, you know, and what do you call it, pronouns, and all these other kind of things like that, you know, conjuncts and these things. But they're all just considered one of the eight. But the point is actually there's only nouns and verbs. All these others are simply assisting in that process. That doesn't come out. If that come out, then kids would actually understand grammar. You understand? But it's all equal. So therefore, you know what I'm saying? This is the problem in the modern, is that they don't understand the balance, because the balance is not speculative. Right? They'll observe and make some adjustments, and oh, we thought it was like that, now we know it's, you know, it should be adjusted this way. And then but after some time, then some other adjustment, and then someone comes up with some other idea. And then changes it again. Right?
Or is there even whole sets of ESL books which you just reject? Whole sets of the same volume
they're just the same. That's the problem with it. That's why it makes it so difficult. See, technically speaking, it would be harder for someone who doesn't know English to learn English than someone who knows... Well, actually, it'd be hard for someone who knows English to learn the other because they don't understand the principle of grammar, actually. You know what I'm saying? There's people who are very intelligent who somehow or another on their own are able to work it out. But you have to work it out yourself because the books actually can't work it out for you. You know? Even the college-level definitions of things... They can't define one of them on their own. Each one is always compared to the next. Like that. That's the difficulty. So by working with it a while, you yourself are able to see. But it's not that the system itself teaches you. That's the difficulty. Right? You understand? So that's the problem because it's based on speculation. Right? These other languages, it's not speculation. They don't know why it's there, but it's been like that for thousands of years. You know what I'm saying? So it's based on a science, but here it's not. So it's, the culture's like that also. They have all these elements, but they actually don't know the importance of one over the other. You know, so therefore, okay, freedom, democracy, so that being most important, so therefore then, you know, the kids should also have a say in what we do in the family and all these things like that, which is nice on certain things. You know, hey, you want to have this for dinner or that for dinner. That's okay, but on other things, it's not. So they can't find the balance between where, you know, then the parent and child, you know, and these other things. And so everything's out of balance. So culturally, it's a mess. You understand? So, therefore, in such a situation, then hearing and chanting will work. And by that purification, then with time one can understand one's conditioned nature and be able to understand how much one can take advantage of or requires engaging karma, jnana, and dhyana yogas. You understand? To address that. But in the beginning, it's not very obvious, so therefore, hearing and chanting. Does that make sense? In other words, if you don't know your varna or ashram, then hearing and chanting is your main. It's going to be main anyway, but that's basically what you got. If you know what your varna and ashram is, then you can say, okay, then I understand how to apply karma jnana. Like, karma yoga means what are you engaging?
Your actions.
Right? Your actions, which means it's based on what your varna and ashram is. Right? Like that. So if you can't understand the varna, how are you going to engage in karma yoga? Right? Does that make sense? Jnana yoga, jnana, you know, then you'd have to have that. Generally, more intellectual people do that. But you do have those. I have seen when I came to India, very intelligent, you know, people who remember Vaishyas, you know, they wear tilak and dhotis and everything, but they're huge businessmen. Like that. And they do the puja every morning for hours. They can quote shlokas coming out of your ears. Like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So you do have that quality. So then they would be balancing these two. Well, someone else in the family just does business. It's only going to be karma yoga. You know, so there is karma with the support of jnana. But then there's others who are, you know, very much just into the jnana element. Does this make sense?
Could I say that to properly engage the secondary, I need to know the primary?
Yes. Until you're situated in the primary, the secondary won't come so well. But if you can't do that and you know the secondary, then engage it. Because by that you'll be purified, then you'll get more of a taste for hearing and chanting. Like that. Yes.
Is this where we see the value of Bhagavatam, the stories of the different personalities in there, and how they come to that after getting the balance wrong. And
they come to what?
To the platform of the hearing and chanting realization of Krishna.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that, but it's they're showing how to engage one's situation, you know, in the Lord's service. So they're showing how it's done as opposed to figuring out how to do it. So does that make sense? Gita's showing you what should be done. In Bhagavatam, they're doing it. They're applying it. You know, like that. Because Dhruva Maharaj knows he's a Kshatriya. Otherwise, why is he asking for a kingdom? Right?
So.
Yeah, you know, so yeah. More land, you know, hey. You know, if you own all the land in the universe, then that's a good monopoly. You know, like that. right? You don't even let people buy, they can only lease, right? You know, so. Okay. The super soul is equally present everywhere in every living being. One who sees this does not degrade himself by his mind and attains Krishna, because that means you won't degrade yourself by the mind, because the mind won't be thinking about stupid stuff, because you see the super soul is everywhere. Everything that you're involved in, super soul is there. Every person you're dealing with, super soul is there. So whereas the lead doesn't give rise to the opportunity for the mind to misbehave, because it only misbehaves because it's not connected to Krishna, but the super soul is everywhere. So therefore, the mind is always properly connected.
Is that why atheists is always, for people who want to enjoy, they always like this? Because if Paramatma is there, how can they?
Yeah, the point is if the Lord's there, if the Lord's involved, then how are you going to enjoy yourself? Like some Gurukul kids were complaining once. Says, we know too much to enjoy the material nature, but we're not serious enough to enjoy spiritual life.
You accept
it,
you ingested the poison, can't go back.
Yeah. So it's like that. So they have fun. Srila Bala Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to verse 29, he who sees the Lord distinctly situated with permanent qualities and form in all living entities equally does not cause degradation of himself by the mind which contemplates the transformation of Prakriti and is lusty for the taste of sense objects. He attains the excellent position, discriminating the self from the transformations of Prakriti by developing disgust for the taste of Prakriti.
This word disgust, as it comes from the idea that it does not belong to me, it belongs to the Lord, so the activity is not proper.
Disgust, it belongs to me, doesn't belong to me. I would say it's more comes from the element, because that wouldn't be disgust. It would come from the element that it's not something you'd want to get involved in. You know what I'm saying? Like some garbage, if we said, here's lunch, you'd be disgusted, right? But a crow or a pig, hey, great. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that because there's a higher taste, the lower one is given up. Because higher taste, that's why he's very specific things. Sees the Lord distinctly. Means it's clear. It's not just, okay, he's kind of there. Remember, what was it, Atriya Rishi? He asked for the Supreme to be his son, but he wasn't very clear exactly what that meant. So then you got, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, as his son, right? Together as one. So distinctly situated, right? Means he's very clearly there in every living entity and in every situation. Everything that's working, he's involved, right? In every atom. So the elements, the cells, the actions that they perform, or the purposes they accomplish, like that, the people involved, super souls there and everything, but distinctly. And it says with permanent qualities and form, right? Because if it's permanent, means then you understand the personal element. Otherwise, he may be there as a temporary manifestation of the mode of goodness of Brahman, like that. You know what I'm saying? The Maya bodies will say like that. So they can relate to that. Yes, you start with that, but then the higher stage, you understand. No. But the point is the higher stage is understanding the permanent qualities in form. Right? Because otherwise, qualities, how will they come from somewhere? Right? And if you're saying quality of Brahman is eternity, eternity is still a quality. So where did eternity come from? You know what I'm saying? How does it come from itself? It is a quality of existence. But what is existing? That's the question. Like that. So when he sees the Lord is permanent, he has the qualities, then that means the qualities are in everything. Right? So and in all living entities. So it doesn't matter who the living entity, the Lord's there. Then you don't degrade yourself because you contemplate the transformation. You think the transformation is yours. But the Lord's in the object, original object. He's in the process of transformation, and he's in the transformed product. You know what I'm saying? So where is the point of, you know, enjoyment? Right? So in other words, one can be an instrument in that process. And then Krishna being happy, you're going to be happy. Right? Like that. And then in that you develop distaste for trying to enjoy. It means developing just for the taste of Prakriti. Now if you're engaging something in Krishna's service and one is happy in that process, is that the taste of Prakriti? No. Even though it's using external energy, it's not the taste of Prakriti. The taste of Prakriti is illusion. Right? So in other words, it's a disgust for trying to taste something in not connected to Krishna. You understand? So it's not like the Mayavas, you just try to give up the taste. It's a matter of you have another taste, so why would you be interested in the lower taste? Right? The kid's out in the backyard eating mud pies, right? So then the mother gives him some nice sandesh or that. So then, liking the sandesh, he doesn't eat the mud pies. Right? Verse 29 describes how. Oh, maybe that's why. Because on your own, you'll make a mud pie. But if there's mom, then there'll be apple pie. So is that meaning that one has already come to a higher stage than that? And so that's what they're trying to bring out. So that's the good American quality.
I don't think they think so much about it.
Oh, I see. So you don't think that there's some hidden philosophical import there?
I might be wrong, but no.
Okay.
My gut says no.
Okay. Verse 29 describes how, by seeing the Lord present everywhere, one can discriminate himself from matter. Verses 30 to 31 explain how one can attain the same result by observing the transformations of Prakriti. One who can see that the soul is beyond bodily activities actually sees. One can see the difference between the bodies of the living entities are due to different desires of the living individual souls and do not actually belong to the soul itself, he actually sees. So here he's showing these different ways of seeing. If you see the super soul there, then you're an instrument in that process, right? So you're just starting with the Lord and then working back to yourself. This other one is then you're seeing the transformations of Prakriti, so you're seeing your separation from it. Because if you say the transformations of Prakriti means it's not your transformation, so you're not Prakriti. Right, so you can see matter is transforming. So why is that transforming? Because of God's, you know, will, His potencies. So therefore, you're also not engaged. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So the different bodies are transforming because of the different desires of the individual soul. So the soul has a desire, then it transforms. These are the seven sisters. They're very noisy. So starting with either one of these, it'll work, the process. You know, you start with the matter, we're not the matter, we're the soul, or we're the soul, we're not the matter, or Paramatma's there, you know, and so therefore all this is his, and so we can take part in it. You know, it's just like the Karma Jnana and Jnana Yogas. One will start off to be the prominent, and the other one's the support. So you can start with any one of these. Right? You can start with the super soul, start with the soul, start with the material energy. But if you see with the same vision, then you'll come to the same result. Right? Because the other one's a yoga, you're connecting. But you're using gyan, you know, activities or meditation. Right? So in here, you're using the field of activities, the soul or the super soul.
When I'm analyzing the Prakriti, am I using Shankar Yoga for that?
When we analyze Prakriti, we use Shankha, yes, basically. Because that then gives the breakdown of the elements. Like that. It means it can also be you're watching the cause and effect. You can also use that as a breakdown. You know, is that you know that the material energy transforms itself. The soul doesn't actually transform it. right? We don't have that potency. Super soul has that potency. So it's actually super soul who, through the modes of nature, then the transformation is there, right? So he sanctions. So then the external potency, then through that modes transforms. But the soul doesn't transform it, one thinks one did. One can be an instrument in it, but one is not actually doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like you take a piece of wood and you saw it in half. You know what I'm saying? What actually sawed it in half?
The saw,
right? And the saw is the soul? No, saw is material energy. So material energy with material energy is transforming. But you can be an instrument in it, that you are involved in the process. You know what I'm saying? So that means the potency of the Lord to cut is then applying on the particular potency of the wood to be cut. If you take that same saw, you know, and take a, you know, like that. Okay, we have this apple juice here, and you know, you want half, I want half. So we'll take the saw and we'll saw the juice in half. Right? No, it won't work. So because that potency is not there. You understand? So the material energy itself then is transforming within itself due to the laws of nature, right? Which are governed by the Lord. He sanctions. Right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? So even within these, you have these different aspects. So, in other words, you're getting these forms on how to put together all this knowledge, right? Because then in each one, then the soul, then there's so much definition of the soul, there's so much definition of action, so much definition of knowledge, right? So you know how that fits. Otherwise, it's this big book that has so much stuff in it. How do you analyze it? But basically, it's being brought down to this, right? You know, there's the field, and there's the knower of the field. Right. And so then in dealing with that, then you're either going to use this, you know, pure devotional service, or you're going to use these various yogas, right? Or a combination, right? And then within each one of them, they have their subdivisions of those of the processes, right? And of what you're dealing with, then the material energy, the living entity, and the Lord, right? Does that make sense? So chit achit ishwara is there, right? Then you have a process. So that's these karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti, right? And then you have a goal. Right? So depending upon what process you're using, you have your goal. So Krishna is recommending the pure love of God. That's generally that. So then these processes are seen that way. So the chit achit ishwara. So then that's complete philosophy. So everything fits into these five. And these five fit into Sambandha, Vidaya, and Prayojana. Does that make sense? The soul is imperishable, transcendental, eternal, beyond the modes of nature. Even while in contact with the body, the soul neither does anything or is actually entangled. When the soul understands his constitutional position as servant of Krishna, he does not mix with the body, though he is situated in it. The soul illuminates the entire body by consciousness. Those who can see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body, the soul, and the supersoul, and can understand the process of liberation, attain Krishna. Right? So all five are mentioned just in that sentence. You understand? One who can see with the eyes of knowledge, right? So that's what's going to be. Means through the eyes of knowledge, means what we've gained from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, right? The difference between the body, the soul, and the supersoul, so chit achit iswar, can understand the process of liberation, that's the Abhideya, and attain Krishna, Prayojana. Right? Srila Prabhupada summarizes chapter 13 as follows.
First part, knowledge, that's broken up in that dasamuru, the sambandha, different aspects of the sambandha.
Yeah, you could say that, but that also defines chit achit and ishwara. But you can see with the eyes of knowledge. The eyes of knowledge is based on the Shastra. So this will then establish, you can say this even takes it more, where it goes into, you know, defining the fundamentals of the Dasa Mool. So then you have what you have, Chit-a-Chit-Ishwara, the process and the goal. But those are based on the authority of the scripture. Right? So the scripture is that basis, and these are what's described in the scripture. Right? So you have praman, or evidence, and you have prameya, what is defined by the evidence. So praman is this knowledge, which comes from shastra. Right? And then prameya is the difference between the body, the soul, the super soul, understanding the process and understanding the goal. Like that. And then within this, then in Dasamul, then the knowledge, the eyes of knowledge is one thing. The process is considered one. Bhakti, the goal, love of God, is one thing. Right? But then in understanding the super soul, then you're going to have three elements. There's going to be Him as the Supreme, right? Him as the Lord of all energies, and Him as the Lord of Rasa. Right? And in the soul, then you're going to have the conditioned soul, the liberated soul, right, and the nature of the soul, the inherent nature of the soul. So these three things will be described. And then achinta beta beta tattva, and what is their actual relationship. Right? That makes sense? Because that difference means then the relationship. That makes sense, yes.
What's the difference between consciousness, how consciousness works with intelligence, mind, you know? Are they mixed together, or you know, how it works?
The consciousness defines your perception. Means if you have proper consciousness, you see that you're the servant of the Supreme Lord. You have polluted consciousness, then you think, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So based on that, then you're going to engage the intelligence, the mind, and the senses in pursuing whatever is the kind of consciousness you have. Right? So if the consciousness is constitutional, you'll pursue that. If the consciousness is conditional, you'll pursue that. That makes sense.
So, like this perception, can we also say that it is kind of intelligence, you know, makes this interception?
It means it will be expressed through intelligence. But the point is consciousness. Means that you're conscious. Intelligence means that you're discriminating. So there's a difference. But the two go together. Because the chit potency is consciousness, and that's what knowledge is. You know what I'm saying? So what the consciousness is. So that's why we're working with polluted consciousness, so we have polluted intelligence. But because of the nature of the soul, you can work with pure consciousness, and therefore pure intelligence. They go together. So if you're using pure consciousness, pure intelligence will be there. Right? In other words, you're going to do something, right? But to do that, okay. And so then, you know, you look at it devotionally, you say, well, this is not so ideal to do. Right? So that's pure consciousness and pure intelligence. But then we decide, no, I'm going to do it anyway. So now that switches us then back into polluted consciousness, and so now you must use your intelligence to decide how you're going to do that activity. You know what I'm saying? Because if you use the pure consciousness and the pure intelligence, then how you would deal with that situation would be different. You understand?
So what's the Sanskrit name for consciousness?
It's chit.
Chit.
And intelligence is buddhi. You know, within consciousness, you're discriminating. See, that's the thing. Is the Maya bodies, they think consciousness stands on its own. Like that. But consciousness and intelligence go together. And here's the fun part, is that if everything's just eternal, where's the consciousness? Right? So how do you even know you're eternal? So if you don't know you're eternal, how do you enjoy being eternal? You know what I'm saying? So because they only accept sat, there is no chit, and there is no ananda. But they're somehow or another saying that all sat, chit, ananda are there, but there's only sat. Right? This is the problem with their... Yeah.
It's hard to pin them down on what is actually their identity.
Yeah, the point is because all their identity is I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the actual identity. You know, they're just willing to give up the lower forms of that and work on a higher form. You know, if I can't be a successful businessman or family person like that, I'll become God. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I'm having trouble, you know, no one will vote for me for mayor, but so therefore I'll run for president. Like that. Yes.
Yeah, Maharaj, it's Jnana Chakshusha. Does it refer to realized knowledge or...
Does?
Does it refer to
realized knowledge? I couldn't hear what you said.
This jnana sakshat doesn't mean to realize.
Jnana sakshat.
Chakshus.
Oh, jnana chakshus.
Yeah.
Realized knowledge. That's what you want to get to, but it can also be just understanding. In other words, you hear something, right? And then in practicing it, you'll take what you've heard, because you understand, and try to apply it in the situation. So you see that way. And so then you try to act that way. And then from that, it'll give you more understanding. So it'll go back and forth until it does become realization. But realization is what you want to get to. But it starts with because it says one who can see with the eyes of knowledge. Right? So then that means you're applying it.
Would it be like a nice karmya level?
Would it be like a nice karmya level?
One
I mean, it would have to be a nice karmia if you're actually seeing the soul, super soul, and the body, the difference. Because then you're not acting for. Right? I mean, if you see the difference and, you know, you're using that for your own sense gratification, then you're not going to understand the process and attain Krishna. So you won't actually understand the distinction between them, because then you think that the living entity is the enjoyer. But he can only think he's the enjoyer if he thinks that it's his. So he would have to think he's transforming the eternal energy. Right? So you'd have to see it in the devotional light. Otherwise, you won't actually see. So only devotees can really see. Right? But that seeing starts with understanding and turns into realization. The purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the supersoul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in verses 8 through 12. Then one can go on to the supreme destination. One can understand that this body is matter. It can be analyzed by its 24 elements. Right? Here's your Shankya. The body is a gross manifestation, and the subtle manifestation is the mind and psychological effects. And the symptoms of life are the interaction of these features. But over and above this, there is the soul, and there is also the supersoul. The soul and supersoul are two. The material world is working by the conjunction of the soul and the 24 material elements. One who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as this combination of the soul and the material elements, and can also see the situation of the Supreme Lord, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world. These things are meant for contemplation and for realization. Right? So this answers your one. Right? Contemplation and realization. And one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master. Very nice summary. Right, so he's put everything into perspective. So you have to know these three, right? And in understanding that, then, and you should know the process of liberation, which is then applying, right? The understanding, starting with one of these or a combination of these, and understanding the complete picture, right? So, and then you analyze the material element, material nature, the body through the material elements, right? And the life forms because of their transformations, you know, birth, growth, maintenance, reproduction, dwindling, death, like this. So all these elements you can see, right? So then you're cultivating through that, using the element of karma, then how these elements are transforming and working together, if that's the area of interest. Or gyan, how the process of knowledge and detachment and all that's working. Or jhan, the process of meditation, the mind and all that. So all these then find their place here. So then this is the science, how all that can be put together. It means whatever's been given before, right? Because up to the 12th chapter, it means first six chapters are describing the process of karma, jnana, and yoga, and the soul, right? Actually, Supreme Lord also. So then, and then after that, specifically the Lord and devotional service, right? So now this is saying how to combine that all. Yes?
By the help of the spiritual master, does that mean Sashida comes to nourish the...
The which comes?
Sashida. The
Shastra.
The knowledge. The
knowledge, okay.
Knowledge about,
yeah,
Krishna. And in this process, I mean, I would realize that I'm a servant and then pick up the mood.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so this move. In other words, these purports, what it says, what one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master. In other words, through these Bhaktivedanta purports. This is how we're going to understand. Because Shastra is defining the Supreme Lord, but from so many different aspects, you know, to any level of realization and any, you know, different method of absorption. So that's all, the Shastra gives all that. So then the parampara then connects that to the Lord and in a specific way. So the instructions of the acharyas then is what is going to make it work. And you approach your acharyas through your spiritual master. So by understanding these purports, then it makes it very clear what the previous acharyas are saying. Right? Because Prabhupada's already taken what they've given here. Like you see, this is very important to note. In here, we have Prabhupada's purports, we have Baladev's, we have Vishwanath, you know, even Ramanuja, or you know, different persons are there. But does one ever notice a difference in flavor? No. But if you just go and pick up their book and read it, you might find a difference in flavor. So what's the difference?
What the flavors and align what we actually need.
That's no, yes, of course. That's there. So that's, but why is it that in this presentation we don't, there's no mix of flavor?
But the principles and aligned.
Okay. Getting there, close, but aligned with what?
With the Siddhanta.
Of? Prabhupada's, yeah, that's the point. In other words, they're being given in the context of how Prabhupada presented it. Does that make sense? So that's what Rupa Goswami means by approaching the previous acharyas through one's own acharya. Right? Does that make sense? So the founder acharya is our acharya. Right? Then we have our spiritual master to see that we're properly connecting to Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Right, but it's always going to be Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Right? The spiritual master's instructions are how to understand Prabhupada's. Right? Does that make sense? They don't stand on their own. Right? Prabhupada stands on its own. That's because it already includes everything else. It's just the way the process works. Right? You have a founder, and that's the way it works. Okay? So if one does that, then it works very, very nicely, as you see. Yes.
The founder charya establishes the hermeneutics of the whole.
Yeah, the founder charya establishes the hermeneutics, you know, for us how to approach. I mean, specifically that hermeneutics is established by Rupa Goswami. But how we're to understand Rupa Goswami, that's then given by our acharya. Because the point is the acharya, you know, knows the situation, so therefore he gives for that. People may say, oh, but the situation has changed, it's been 50 years. Right? Think about it. When you read Greek history or Roman history, how many paragraphs can you cross a few centuries? Right? Because the Greeks, you know, they started like 2,000, 3,000 BC. Right? And generally in one paragraph, you've crossed that whole thing. Right? You know, they were there, some villagers, they somehow or another got together and figured out and said, hey, we seem to be the same kind of, you know, wild tribals. You know, we kind of speak a similar language and we kind of have the same ideas. Hey, why don't we kind of work together? Like that. And then they created the, what is it, Minoan culture or something like that. And that, but then some others that were on the other side of the Aegean Sea, right? Big Sea, right? So very different and all that. Then they developed kind of also a slightly different thing. And then some other marauders from somewhere else that God only knows where they came from, because no one could figure it out, right? Because all their world were Greeks. But where did these guys come from? And so they came in and then that disturbed that and that created this. And then it somehow or another, the whole culture broke down. And for, I forget it is, 200 to 400 years, they had no written language, they had nothing. You went from this whole society to nothing.
Dark Ages.
Yeah, the Dark Ages, the Greek Dark Ages. And then somewhere about 700 BC, they somehow or another figured it out and got it back together and started the Olympics. You know, so that may have been the thing, you know, that brought everyone together and everything like that. You know, so. Yeah, so I was just thinking, he said, they brought everyone together because they got a bunch of nude men, you know, running around and doing activities so everyone could come and look at them. Right? That was the start of how it got everyone together, right? Okay, so my point is that 50 years in modern culture doesn't actually mean anything. Right? You know, age of enlightenment. How long was that? Renaissance. How long is that? Dark Ages. How long is that? We're talking sometimes hundreds of years. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is, and so Prabhupada says books are for 10,000 years because there's always going to be this element of people not following the Vedic culture in this context of, you know, does that make sense? So that means it always will be valid. Yes.
So the relationship between Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru and the Acharya and the Shastra, anything particular to look out for?
In other words, the founder Acharya is speaking what the head of the line is saying. So he's able to articulate it so that you understand. In other words, Prabhupada can articulate it so the modern person can fully understand what Rupa Goswami is saying and apply it in his life. That's what makes the founder Acharya. Right? Then, so that means any other guru after that, he has to be speaking what Prabhupada says in that flavor. It adjusts from there, then it's not like, well, he's a guru and it's, you know, it's his right. No. Because it's in the founder's line, these are the founder's people. Right? So he's just an assistant in that process. Right? So that's why the process works, because the instruction that you're getting from the founder is that, you know, Uttamadhikari, Nityasiddha, you know, liberated, pure devotee, you know, whatever else you want to throw in, like that, that is already there. Because the point is why do you want to take initiation from a pure, unalloyed devotee? Because of that proximity you get to the body or something, you know.
I would like to copy the behavior.
Yes. So the point is it's the instruction. So that's already there in Prabhupada's purports, right? But that still has to be given because the parampara must connect to you. Right? So that connection is there. But then at the same time as the instruction, that still goes back to Prabhupada. Like Narottam Das Thakur, he was not a Diksha disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, but he's a Siksha disciple. But there's four generations between them. You understand? Does that make sense? So that's the element, and then does that make sense? So the siksha, because it's instruction, then that element is eternal. The diksha element's dealing with your conditioned nature. Right? So you have to have the diksha element to deal with the conditioned nature to connect that to the siksha that's given by the founder. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, do we tend to commit, to see the diksha sometimes the only siksha as remaining?
Do we see the diksha as the only siksha? If we're looking at it from diksha terms, in other words, the neophyte tends to do that, which is not a problem if it's the reality. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, someone comes to Krishna consciousness, then with time one starts to have faith in many senior devotees, right? And then with time, one of those becomes prominent, then you take initiation. So now the natural process is, this is the spiritual master who gave diksha, and his siksha is the most prominent. But these other siksha gurus are also part of the process of your upliftment. That would be the natural stage. Right? So then if that's there, if anything does happen to, and it's all siksha, in other words, it was all based on siksha, just that the prominent you took diksha from. Right? So now if anything happens to that diksha guru, right, that means you have all that support of the other siksha gurus, because it's siksha while you're approaching the spiritual master. Right? Diksha being a ritual, it's already accomplished. And the point of diksha is to hear siksha. So one technically doesn't need reinitiation. Reinitiation is important if your diksha guru wasn't a bona fide diksha guru. Or not, let's say, was not a bona fide siksha guru. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like the family guru. So maybe Goswamis, and that diksha would, you know, and technically remains, but that's generally going to be like Upanayanam or something like that. And even if it was Pancharatrik, then it's not actually a proper Pancharatrik connection. So therefore you have from someone else. You know what I'm saying? So like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's taken from, you know, someone in the Goswami line. It's a bona fide Goswami line. So the diksha connection itself is bona fide, but their siksha is a bit out to lunch. So, you know, he decided to, you know, go with someone who is... Yes.
If we hear siksha from different people, like proper disciples, even though they follow in line to a prophet, but they are different personalities. And
they're different personalities. That's why the diksha guru is the prominent. So, I couldn't say again?
No, we cannot stick only to diksha guru, because in the society, we have many senior devotees we can hear from.
Yes, no, but we can hear from that we have that kind of faith that they would be the prominent ones in your life, taking you back to Godhead. See, the difficulty why I'm saying this is because before, it was popular in the 80s that, you know, you have your guru and have all these different persons, so when you take initiation, then the chaste thing to do is you give up that interaction with those other persons on that close level. And so it's just the diksha guru. Then when the diksha guru left, then they're left with nobody. Well, if they hadn't taken that neophyte attitude, because no one said that you have to do this, this is just their own idea, you know? And so then you would have support of other devotees. And if you understand the diksha connection is still alive, like that, because it's kept alive by siksha. If you're getting siksha from others, it's alive. You're not getting it siksha, then you have a question. So if you're defining it that you only get siksha from this person that you take diksha from, if you lose the diksha guru, then in your process, you would have to accept another diksha guru to get siksha. So therefore, the diksha connection is lost. But it's a very neophyte way of doing it. It can be done, but it's extremely neophyte. You know what I'm saying?
Right now, we have Srila Prabhupada and even many different people.
No, but that's sadhu. You have guru, sadhu, and shastra. So that's sadhu. Because within you have three levels of the preachers. You have the founder, acharya. you have the Sadguru, which is the Diksha Guru, or any Siksha Gurus on that level. And then you have the preachers. Right? So the preachers preach to you, but they're not taking you personally as a responsibility. They're taking the responsibility to preach to those within Prabhupada's mission. You understand? So that can be any senior devotee. You know? So like that. So they're all Siksha Gurus, but they're not Siksha on the level of Sa. Right? Does that make sense? You're like the temple president is there, he guides you in that. But then at some point you leave the temple or he goes somewhere else. You may be no specific, you know, feelings of obligation. Right? But you can, just like the Diksha Gurus on the level of Sat, they take you back to God. You can have Siksha Gurus like that also. Does that make sense? So there's three levels. So technically this is next year's discussion, because this is Harinam Chintamani. On the verse, not accepting, not thinking the guru is an ordinary person, right? In the 10 offenses. Can we move from this? Somehow or another, it's interesting is that you notice this pattern? So when we get to the last page, when we end it, because then it's conclusion, then you bring everything together and use the different things, somehow that sparks off this whole, you know, it means we can go through 2-3 pages in a day. But when we get to the last page, you know, that last verse, we can't get past that because it brings out, it's so condensed, it brings out so many discussions. You notice this? Yeah? So it's always very interesting. Yeah, because of the summary. So it sparks all these things. It's very far out. Okay, so we're clear on that last, what do you call it?
So
two sentences, yes. Just keep it to this. You know what I'm saying? Then you can ask whatever you want.
Why do you say that diksha is for the conditioned state?
Because the purpose of diksha is that you will be serious about taking siksha. So in the liberated state, just by hearing siksha, you are committed to it. So there's no need of a ritual of diksha to connect you.
So ritual makes one more serious.
Yes, because the conditioned soul thinks that something's happened. Right? Because you think of transformation. You do something, you've transferred the material energy that's there. So the ritual is there then as samskar to give a positive impression. You know, that now you're connected here, like that. So it does practically do those things. But the point is the need is there for the... Because otherwise, it's just... If you didn't, then according to... Means Diksha Guru, you know, you're in a good mood or not, then still is your Diksha Guru. Because you had an initiation, then everybody saw that. And then it's known this is your Guru. Right, but if it wasn't known, it was just something like that, then, you know, today talking about, yeah, this is a guru, but then tomorrow they say, you know, well, it's just, you know, it's just some feelings, but actually he's my guru. You know, it won't be focused. You understand? Because the point is that commitment, that surrender, because that's ultimately what has to be done to Krishna. So you're practicing what you're doing for Krishna with the spiritual master. Does that make sense?
How to accommodate different applications?
Right? How to accommodate different applications?
How to accommodate that?
The point is you choose someone who you can relate to. Right? It means, in other words, they're able to speak Prabhupada's instructions so you can understand them and apply them successfully in your life. That's how you're choosing. Right? That's the point. So there's, because the conditioned natures are so varied, that means the presentations or approach of the spiritual master may be different. You know, so some, you know, how they'll give and that. But you see they're all effective. But it's just the approach is very different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so,
so you choose something that works for you. That's the point, is does it work or not? It's not a matter of, you know. So that's why it should be a little bit more than, oh, he smiled at you. You know?
So that gets me free from the idea that I have to put all the gurus, I mean, on a, I have to have a complete harmony between our application in order to be happy.
Have to have complete harmony between all the gurus. Means harmony is that they're serving Prabhupada and they're trying to do something there within his mission. So that's the harmony. Right? So there's a oneness in their purpose, but there's individuality. But the point is, we're an individual, so we choose working with an individual. And so this is not bodily conscious. It's a matter of just what works. You know, it's just like, is it bodily conscious that somebody's more absorbed in karma yoga or someone's in jnana yoga? No, it's connected to Krishna, so that's not considered. Right? So one, that's why Rupa Goswami says one should associate with like-minded devotees that are more advanced. Right? Because then in that environment you can advance nicely. If it's like-minded, you can relate. You know what I'm saying? If you can't relate, how will you know what they're saying and this and that? You know what I'm saying? You know, so, yeah. Yes. Not to be present. Well, the thing is here is that the like-mindedness becomes very general, and that they're within Prabhupada's mission, they're following Prabhupada's program, they're speaking on Prabhupada's books. So that's the common element. But in closeness or in intimacy, then you're more careful, you know, that you are with those that you can, you know, relate to, and therefore you feel inspired and can advance nicely. But these are general programs, you know, so it's not, so that wouldn't apply. And, you know, who's offering Mangalartik, or who's leading the kirtan, or, you know, who set up the mic, you know, like that. You know, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy who set up the mic's wearing pants. I'm not speaking in this mic. You know, like that. You know,
contaminated.
So.
Contaminated.
Yes. Does that make sense? So there's a general, but then who he wants more close with, then that's then you're specific, and that's not bodily conscious. That's a matter of identifying conditioned nature and making it work. So it's using intelligence, right? If you think I am that conditioned nature, that's bodily conscious. Does that make sense? Then chapter 14, the three modes of material nature. All embodied souls. But you could say, embodies. Yeah, I guess you could twist the grammar and get it to work. Like you entrain and detrain, so you know, entrain you get on, so embodies, then you've been put into the body, you know, so he's been, you know, yeah. Because then that, if it's happening at present, then it would be embodies. If it's in the past, it would be embodied, right? So this is talking in the present, so it's not trying to avoid any, you know, confusion of the mode of ignorance here. Right. Okay. All embodied souls are under the control of the three modes or qualities of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Lord Krishna explains that these modes, what these modes are, how they act upon us, how one transcends them, and the symptoms of one who has attained the transcendental state. Right? So you have to know what they are and how they act upon you. Right? Then how you're going to transcend them, what are the symptoms that one has transcended? Right? So basically saying here, these are the four things that one's going to learn in this chapter. Right? Because now it said before, material nature, right, means you have to know the field. There's a material nature. Material nature works by the modes. Right? So now, in this chapter, we'll figure out how the modes work. So this defines that aspect. Right? So then we have verses 1 to 2. The Lord glorifies the knowledge of the three modes. Verses 3 to 18, description of the three modes and their effects. And verses 19 to 27, transcending the modes. So, verses 1 to 2. The Lord glorifies the knowledge of the three modes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again, I shall declare to you the supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature, like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation, nor disturbed at the time of dissolution." In Bhagavad Gita 3:22, it is said, 13:22, "The living entity in material nature follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species." Chapter 13 described the conditioned soul is distinct from matter and yet entangled by it. Chapter 14 explains in detail how the soul is controlled by the three modes and how he can attain freedom from them. In verses 1 to 2, Krishna says that he will explain the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one attains Krishna's nature and is liberated. Right? So he says, again, he's going to describe. So it means now we're getting to a specific detail in this area. But at the same time, as it's described, means it's being in the context of how this connects with everything else. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 1, "From the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the Lord himself is further enlightening Arjuna. One understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation. He will come to an understanding of devotional service." Right? Here he's used as philosophical speculation. So the point is philosophical speculation means you're taking what's there and trying to analyze it from different perspectives, right? And trying to apply it this way and that way. I mean, so in other words, you have something and you say, well, if that's there, then that could mean this and that, and you try to put it together. So So the process, the mechanics of mental speculation are the same, whether it's being used by the devotee or by the materialist or by the Mayavadi, right? But generally we see is that it's philosophical speculation we generally use in the negative, right? Because it's application. That's all they do, the jnanis, is mental speculate. But the problem is it's not connected to Krishna. So they're just going through the mechanics but not actually getting anywhere. Right? And the karmis are using the process to dream up newer and newer ways to enjoy the material energy. And getting nowhere. Right? So this philosophical speculation, mental speculation, basically is the same thing. Whether it's more on the intellect, less on the mind, or more on the mind and less on the intellect, means in prominence. Right? In other words, philosophical speculation will more mean that the intellect is the prominent, right? But there is a element behind it why you're doing something, right? There is a mental need that you're doing. Otherwise, why would you be accepting the process, right? Unless it's going to give you some benefit. But the focus is more on the intellect, right? Mental speculation will be more on the experience and all that. You know, so it's just, but it's the same thing, you understand? And so the devotee uses the same thing. So technically this means vichar, looking at it from different angles and all that like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why generally philosophical speculation is always used in a negative connotation, because it's about the others. Because the devotee uses he contemplates, he meditates, you know, like that. These kind of words will be used. But technically, mechanically, it's mental philosophical speculation. Understand? So occasionally you'll see it used in connection to the devotee in the process. Yes.
Sometimes you hear from devotees that they're afraid to do that. But we're speculating.
But the speculation is... In other words, you've heard material life is full of misery. So unless you observe and you see somebody with a sad face, so then you're going to come, well, okay, that's from this. Or something happens and then... You know, they get all upset. You know, you're there in the public place and all that, and the family's there, and everyone's laughing and this and that, and ooh, 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 with the baby and all the kind of stuff like that. And then something happens. They turn around. Oh, can you get this? And then, you know, everybody's happy and all that. And then they turn around. The kid's gone. Right? Then there's freak out. Where's the kid running around? This and that. You know, is he? Like, you know what I'm saying? So then you put it together. Okay, material is a place of misery. Right? And that misery is based on attachment. So now these people are freaking out because of their attachment to the kid. Right? So you can see it directly there happening. You know what I'm saying? So that process is already going on. Because anyway, we may not want to use it intellectually in philosophy, but we will surely will use it, you know, materially. You know, for speculation, I mean, our own enjoyment, sense enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? I ate that, and that, you know, so rich, that makes sense, so therefore I should eat all these light things, and then what light things I could eat? Well, this would be nice, or that would be nice, and we ate that, but that gave us gas, so then we'll eat this. And so that's mental speculation. You know what I'm saying? So that's going on. Everybody's doing that. So the process is already being used. It's not just a matter of whether we connect it to Krishna or not. Right? So karma yoga means you connect that process of mental speculation on, you know, transforming material energy and connecting it to the Lord. Right? Jnana, then you use that, you know, that speculative power of applying the knowledge and that element of detachment on the Lord. Yes?
The word speculate, also, the old meaning that I know is like a business venture, where you put your money in and you don't know what, like gambling. Very risky business.
Yeah.
Adventure.
Yeah.
Like that.
So, well, it is an adventure. Yeah.
we're putting our faith or putting our energy into something that we don't know what the result will be. Whereas, so that's a negative point.
Yes, that would be the negative. Yeah, you don't quite know. But if you know what it is, that Krishna is there, but you're trying to get there, then technically it's not speculation. Because I think also speculation can mean just that investment of time. But you would only put it where there's actually an opulation. I had to get that word. opportunity.
Opportunity and speculation.
Yeah, opportunity. Opportunity to speculate. That's wild. That you get something from it, you know. But it does have that element of the unknown, you know. That's the weak side. But if it's connected to Krishna, then it's fine. But that means then by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that's your basis. Then based on that, then you're trying to apply that into your situation. Right? It means you hear from the authority, Shabda. Then you try to see that Shabda in Pratyaksha. So if you can see the authority of scriptures in your what you see with your senses, that means you've actually understood.
Yeah.
Then it's not technically what we call speculation in that negative connotation. It's simply, if it's pratyaksha without, that's the speculation. That's the problem. Yes.
Shri Prabhupada gives an example.
Oh, okay.
The devotee hears that Krishna is the taste of the water, and then when he drinks water, he meditates. He thinks how exactly Krishna is tasting.
Yes, he's trying to find how is that. Yeah.
So it's an example of vichara.
Okay. Okay. You didn't hear? You're saying Prabhupada gives the example that of this is that you hear that Krishna is the taste of water. So then when you drink water, then you contemplate how is it Krishna is that taste. You're trying to find that. What is that? Connect that point with the senses of tasting and that experience. So then you bring it all together. Right? So then... In the, if one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. In other words, you're going to have to go in and see what you're doing in the modes of nature that are there and try to connect them all together. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly be freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in this material world. Now, in this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains that those modes of what those modes of nature are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. Right? So it also how they give a liberation. So that means the modes can be used to get out. If you use the modes to get in, you can use the modes to get out. Right? You use the ladder to get into a hole, you can use the ladder to get out. Right? Just have to go the other direction. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. See, the problem is that you've used the ladder, you've come down. Right into the hole, right, or into the well here. But then, if you know the material world is a reflection, so therefore the bottom of the well is up, right. So you want to go up out of here up to the transcendental platform. So if you don't actually understand the direction of the acharyas, you'll be trying to go farther down the ladder to get up. Problem. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attain perfection and transfer it to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. Right? In other words, because once you get more, you can explain it more clearly. Right? And then as that goes, more clear again, more clear again. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. Right? So this is knowledge, not devotion. Right, the devotion, that's been clearly explained, but the processes of knowledge, how that's worked. So this is going to, because the modes of nature are what you're directly going to deal with. The other said, you tell the difference between matter and spirit, you know, and the modes of nature control matter. But to understand that, that's where, that's your key. Because then if you'll see the elements of goodness, passion, ignorance, then you can start to differentiate, right? Because then goodness, you'll get knowledge. Right, from there, then you can see properly. It's a, goodness is illuminating. The others are a little less than illuminating. And knowing this, may many attain perfection. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. Remember, perfection means, I mean, you have two levels. One, liberation. That's the general term of perfection. But also when you understand actual perfection means situating oneself as a servant of Krishna, right? In one's relationship with Krishna. Because that is permanent perfection, right? There's temporary perfection and permanent perfection. So verses 3 to 18. Description of the three modes and their effects. Okay, verse 3. The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings, O son of Bharata. Right. So here is again established that the material energy is Brahman. Right. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes, right? So coming in contact, it's the modes that are conditioned, because the modes carry everything out, right? So all of what's going on is carried out by the modes, because remember, the modes are the active form, right? Of, you know, of the divisions of the reflection of this, in, you know, the how you say, the external Brahman. The internal Brahman, it's Sat-Chit and Ananda, right? Samvit, Sandini, Ladini. That's the reflection here. So it's the same principle. Right? So once one's situated in Rasa, spiritual platform, that differentiation is not so important. Just like when one is absorbed in Rasa here, you don't worry about the distinction. Right? But if you're going to get, if you're going to transfer, then you have to be able to distinguish these so one can get out of that and be working under the Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini, as opposed to goodness, passion, and ignorance. Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, well, this is not a major topic. It's a major topic because everything that goes on here is by those modes. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti, and because of this, the embodied entity is bound to material fruit of actions. Right? These are essential points. Then there'll be more definitions later. Right? It means all definitions that will come in this chapter and in later chapters, you have to take it back to this. Right? In other words, it's pure, it's illuminating, frees one from sinful activities. Right? Happiness is there, knowledge is there, but one is conditioned to that. It's still a mode. Right? And then this is, passion is unlimited desires and longings. Right? So that's going to bind you to fruit of work. So if you want to get out of fruit of work, you have to give up the mode of passion. You can't have longings and desires. Right? O son of Bharata, know that the mode, so that's why Naishkarmya, because then the mode of passion is removed. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. Right? So that indolence is not wanting to work. You know, liking sleep and video games, right? That's the madness. O son of Bharata, right? The mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Passion conditions one to fruit of action. And ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Right? So this is like the essential point of what they do. Right? So the one is the situation they are, and this is specifically what they do. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. O son of Bharata, sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Right? So that means they're all, through knowledge, one is dealing with all the gates according to Shastra. Right? One is connecting it to Krishna. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptom of great attachment, fruit of activities, intense endeavor and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. Right? So you can see it's when all the senses are engaged, that's the mode of goodness. You know, properly and according to Shastra and uplifting activities. Right? When mode of passion, then you'll see that the attachment is great, the fruit of activity is very strong. You know, intense endeavor, they're working very, very hard. Right? Uncontrollable desire, they just have to, you know, have these things and work on these things. So this is how you tell, you know, so to that degree it's that intensity, to that degree passion is there. When there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. The results of pious activities is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But the action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Right, so pious activity means you're doing according to Shastra. So then there'll be that element of detachment and all those things like that. Therefore it's considered in that way. But if one's doing activities without that, it's not in sacrifice, then it's passion.
Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam describes this triguna. Are there some descriptions of gunas in Shruti, in Upanishads?
Shruti, in Vedas. But this is Upanishad, so that's Veda. Yeah, means, in other words, the Veda means the Samhita, which has all the mantras. The Brahmana is how to use those mantras in sacrifice. The Aranyaka is that explain the metaphysics of the mantras. And the Upanishads that explain the philosophy. Right? So Gita is then a essence of all the Upanishads. So this is Vedic understanding.
Maharaj, so like three modes, you know, according to Yi Jin, you know, there's strong Yang Qi and dark Yin Qi and then balanced. So it is something similar like the three modes.
Well, what do the first two do?
Like we speak Yang, Yang Qi.
Oh, okay, Yang. Yin and Yang. Male and female principle. Yeah, you could say that. It means the male principle will be the mode of ignorance. So the female principle will be the mode of goodness.
Yeah.
And then the mode of passion will bring it together. Like that. You could look at it that way. Or you could take it, yeah, no, you would that way. Because it's through interaction that it's balanced. You can only balance if there's action. See, the problem is they're trying to balance by inaction. But how did they learn that? Through action. So this application is an action, not an inaction. Does that make sense?
So can we say that that Yi Jin, you know, the changing book is kind of science about three modes?
You can, but the problem is they won't know its full application. There's something is there. You know. Does that make sense? But see, it's like this. Something is good, don't get too excited, because within time it'll go bad. Yes. And if it's bad, don't lament, because in time it'll go good. Right? That's basically what it'll tell you. So the point, but why does that work? That the I Ching can't tell you. Right? It means if you run into an obstacle, then you you go deeper, right? Because the water runs down the hill, runs into an obstacle. So being shallow like that, it won't get past. But if it just sits there and doesn't move forward, it'll get deeper, right? Then it gets high enough that it goes over, right? But the point is where did that nature of water come from? Where does the nature of earth, water, you know, how you say, the fire, the wood, the metal, all those, where did that come from? that I Ching can't tell you. It can only tell you that this is there. So it's something what's left over from their understanding and their connection with the Vedic culture. So there's something is there, but they're not, but where that comes from they can't say. So this is a deeper understanding. Like that. I would say it's more the masculine and feminine principle. They probably put less on modes of nature. But there's probably some element in that. Because they go together. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. Somehow or another, the others, you can say it so nicely in like one word, and ignorance always has to have a whole group of, you know, bad words. But it always comes back to madness and illusion. That seems to be foolishness, madness, and illusion. It comes back to these things. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. The Lord opens the description of the soul's entanglement by identifying himself as the origin of all living entities. It is Krishna who impregnates the total material substance, Brahman, with the living beings, and makes possible the birth of all species of life. Thus he is the seed-giving father. 3 and 4. So, 3 and 4? Okay. So, the point is it has to be understood, because we're distinguishing these. What we have to understand is there's is Brahman, because otherwise one would say, well, this is, why would we deal with this? Right? But it's also Brahman. Right. So the living entity, so what we're having to distinguish is the types of Brahman. Supreme Brahman, living entity Brahman, material energy Brahman. Right? And being able to understand that, that's knowledge. Not understanding that, that's illusion. Right. So that's what's trying to be gained here. Right? And it also establishes that everything else comes from Krishna. Krishna put the living entities here. Krishna is impregnating the material energy. So he's the one that's making it work. So therefore, if you want to actually understand, then you have to understand him. Does that make sense? When the living entity comes in contact with the material nature, it becomes conditioned by the three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the living entity, because he is transcendental, has nothing to do with this material nature. Still, because he has become conditioned by the material world, he is acting under the spell of the three modes of nature. Because living entities have different kinds of bodies, in terms of the different aspects of nature, they are induced to act according to that nature. This is the cause of the varieties of happiness and distress. So one will come in contact, but because one's come in contact, one doesn't know the material energy. So one's going to act, therefore one's going to be, one doesn't know what to gain, right? So there's no, specifically as such, passion. And there's no delusion generated from interaction with the material energy. Means there's a delusion about your position as enjoyer. So there's already some ignorance. So that's why then the material energy becomes the place for us. Right? We want to enjoy. You know? So we're controller, we don't know who we are, we think we're the enjoyer, so the passion ignorance is inherent there in the polluted consciousness. Right? But it's not from the modes of nature, it's the polluted consciousness. So therefore when we come in contact with the material energy, then, though we'll be situated in a position of goodness, the tendency is towards passion and ignorance. So unless you figured it out in that first contact, you know, like that, or first, second, like this contact, then one could technically get out. But if we look around, then we will notice that maybe everybody didn't get out, you know, so quickly. Right? So, yeah. So that then determines, by dealing with it because of that, then that will generate the further things and bring one under the most because of the actions performed. Right? And so then that will bring to this material world. Means lower and lower into the material world. One's already would have been situated there. Okay. Yes.
So the desire to enjoy separately from the Lord, that's mode of ignorance.
But then it means the separate from the Lord is the ignorant part. The wanting to enjoy, that's the passion part.
But then we understood that that desire originated from our original position. So then what that.
No, it's our original position becomes covered. Because you can see the position of acting as an instrument or acting as the controller and enjoyer. Right? But somehow or another, we thought the controller and enjoyer part looked good.
But then from that thought, then that would mean that there would be ignorance there.
No,
be covered
no, it just means you can see both.
Right.
And it's just a matter of...
The options are there.
Yeah, it's just the options. It's not inherent.
Right.
It's inherent in the material energy, but it's not... So if you look at... It's like this. You have Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini. Right? Now you're looking at the reflection. So you think you're looking at Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. Right? Because everything looks the same. But you're actually looking at goodness, passion, and ignorance. So if you think, well, that looks nice, then you're under the modes. And if you think that doesn't look nice, then you'll be under the Sambit Sandini Hladi. Yes?
Does the mode of passion lead to the mode of ignorance?
Mode of passion lead to ignorance.
Like contemplation of objects of the senses leads to attachment and anger and delusion. And
yeah. It just means, in other words, your desire becomes so strong that it's unobtainable. Right, and so then at that point, then the delusion and madness and all that come in. People who are clinically insane is because their desires are greater than what actually is the balance. You know what I'm saying? So that's why they have so much material desire like that. No, but it may be manifest in some more peaceful fashion, but that's what it is. So Prabhupada mentions that if it's too crazy, that they can chant Om, because even a crazy person can chant Om, and that will purify and then start to bring them back to the, how do you say it, a bit more balanced state. You know, in other words, workable insanity rather than unworkable. So in other words, everybody's crazy, but if it's unworkable, that's called clinical. And if it's workable, then it's not clinical. Then they move around freely. Right?
Maharaj,
yes.
You mentioned the other day that when we come to the material world, we are in the Vishuddha Sattva state.
Yes.
Is that where the kavana is?
Vishuddha Sattva, well, that's the primary. Then the secondary is made. So, but the point is the first position one's in the... is Brahma, right? Like that. So one's working with that primary creation and creating the secondary. But if one gets attracted or distracted by that manifestation, then, you know, one moves down from there. So generally Brahma, the Pajapatis, the great sages, and then after that, then, you know. You know, next stop, Indra Gopa. Like that, so. But that's how it works. So everybody, because the point is Brahma is the most pious living entity in the universe. Now, what's more pious than somebody who's never been here? Huh? You understand?
Okay.
You understand? Because he doesn't have any, there's no sin, there's no nothing. So he'll be the most pious living entity. So naturally he'll be Brahma. But then as Brahma, then he may get more distracted than advisable, right? Yes.
Brahma has some pretty far out desires also.
Yeah, it means his point is you're within the material situation, but those develop as it goes. You know, you don't see them right in the beginning, but as the transformations of material energy take place, then there's that attraction. Because that's the point. One can see the material and spiritual when it's attracted by the form of the material. So as more you get involved with the forms and various forms of the material, that will make one more and more entangled. That's why one has to understand the soul is different from the field. Right? So all that entanglement, because you think I'm involved in that, but we're not involved. We're not the controller and enjoyer. The super soul is. So if you see the soul and super soul in connection with and then their connection, actual connection with the field of activity, then one doesn't get entangled. Or if one is entangled, one can become unentangled. Does that make sense?
Do I understand entanglement from a biological point of view as neuroreceptors and transmitters which make you condition to a specific mode of nature?
One could take that approach, but the point is which came first? The desire or the, what do you call it, neurotransmitter? Which came first? Right, so that's the point. So because that's there, then there's the mechanics. Because otherwise, the soul is naturally, you know, a lover of Krishna. So that emotions are going to work very nicely with the spiritual form. Everything will work very smoothly because it is the manifestation of the actual nature of the soul. Material world, the body is not the soul. The soul has desire. So there is technically no connection between them. Right? The spiritual world, the soul and the spiritual form are non-different. So therefore what the soul thinks and desires is what they do with the form. So you don't have to have a mechanics there. In the material world, the soul is not the body. So therefore for the body to respond and all that to that, that's why there's this nice elaborate system of all your different, you know, chemicals and, you know, different elements within the body that do all the functioning.
The reason I ask is because sometimes someone is stuck with the mode of passion, for example, many desire.
Yeah, but that's from previous lives, so he has a little too much adrenaline or whatever it is that creates all that.
If he has a biological understanding, does it help?
If you have a biological understanding, it can be a start. The understand is that, you know, I am not these chemicals, right? So, like that, it can start that way.
I'm just a victim.
Yes. Well, I can't even say you're a victim, no, because you put yourself there. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like if you go up to the counter, buy the ticket, step onto the roller coaster, and then once it starts, then start claiming that you're a victim, then it's not going to actually get very far. Maybe in America, but you won't get in the universe. It won't work with Maya. She's a little more clever than that. Yes?
If we understand that sometimes what we think is genuine emotion is actually hormonal or biological effect.
No, but that's how it's affected. You know, it's like this. You feel this emotion that would not, in the spiritual, you know, the natural thing would create tears, but how is it going to happen since the soul is not actually connected with the body? So there's the mechanics of how that's produced. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's the consciousness of the soul that's important. The mechanics aren't the main focus. Right? To some degree, there's some focus. How much it will be useful to understanding that. But the point is whether one's crying out of ecstasy and chanting Hare Krishna or crying out of ecstasy because he just won the lottery. So the point is that the mechanics of how this body will function are the same.
I think especially as women, you have a tendency to mix things together, you know, to not discriminate. So if you can also see from that, you know, to be able to dissect it like that, that it's not necessarily something meaningful. It's the cause is obviously from our identification with the body, and therefore there's a mechanical effect. But to see the actual effect as being...
It'll help. You know, in other words, if you know it's hormones, that's why you're crazy, then it makes it a lot easier than thinking, I actually am crazy. Because it's just a matter of, with time, you know, chemicals go away. At least they're supposed to. That's the theory, at least.
So they say. So they say.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? So that can help. The whole point is analyzing how the body's working, you know. And so then, but what one wants to see is, what are they generating? That's more of a problem, right? That they're generating emotions, that's not necessarily the problem. But what emotions are being generated? So you understand what modes at work. Because the same chemicals can produce all these different feelings. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, I mean, if you analyze, you can see basically it's the same feelings, just the mind, I say, interprets them, yes, as different. But otherwise, it's like adrenaline does one thing, you know, but you'll interpret it in so many different ways. You know, some person, you know, this is freaky. The other guy, wow, this is great. You know, so you know, does that make sense? So that's the thing. Is that there's only so many chemicals. And so they make a particular effect, but that effect can be seen in so many ways, depending upon the situation. Does that make sense?
Can we say that the mode of goodness is a manifestation of Chit Shakti?
It's a reflection of Chit Shakti. No, excuse me. It's a reflection of the Hladini.
Reflection of Hladini Shakti.
Yeah. Passion is a reflection of Chit. Ignorance is a reflection of Sandini. Because Sandini is existence. Right, so your existence is in ignorance, not in knowledge of your or an identification as a servant of Krishna. Right, you know, and then the chit means you have your knowledge and your activities, but your knowledge and activities are for the purpose of, you know, gaining control and enjoyment. So it's passion. Right, and then one's actual enjoyment, that's the mode of goodness, because it only happens in the present, right? So it only lasts a moment, right? So unless you can see it with knowledge, then you continue staying in the present. But otherwise, I'm going to get it, I have it, it's in the present, you know, but having it turns into the past, right? That was the difficulty in the beginning of that, the present of the embodies and the past of embodied, right? So that was the... Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it's only a moment there. Same time as your action should be done in the mode of goodness, means in the present. Right? So in there, then it's done in the present, so that's goodness. Future is passion, past is ignorance. Right? But action itself would be considered passion, because it generates results. But if it's done for the results, not for yourself, it doesn't give the effect of passion. It gives the effect of goodness. I'm doing the activity to get the result for myself. That's why it's called passion. Right? Does that make sense? Because the mode of goodness is going to reward the result. But if it's done for a higher purpose, in sacrifice, then getting that result isn't considered passion. It's considered goodness. So like this, you study the modes, then you start to see how things work.
So the modes moves according to one's consciousness?
No, the modes are there. They act upon you according to your consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Now, you can either be affected by them or liberated by them. Right? The pure devotee is acting in the material world, so it's the modes of nature that are getting things done. But he's liberated. But for the other living entity, because he sees it in an illusion, thinks that he's the controller of it, therefore the effect of the modes binds him. Let me see.
Like one mode, you know, going over another mode, you know, like turn, you know, in turn the moves. So that is according to one's consciousness.
Yes.
Based on that.
Means the situation is there, that's affected by the modes, but what you do with it, that's up to you. You can either work within the modes or not. Okay? So end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.